We don't think about it much, but much of Western culture seems to put an emphasis on maturity and adulthood. I suppose many of us take this for granted, that with the passage of time and the gaining of experience, one grows wiser, more mature, or so we're told. But as with many other conventions of our human experience, Mary Baker Eddy often took issue with some of the assumptions we attach to things like learning, growth, and maturity, even safety. As the discoverer and founder of Christian Science and an author constantly refining her landmark book, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, she wrote frequently about children in a different light. Not as lacking in wisdom or limited by immaturity or in need of being sheltered from dangers lurking around corners, but as inherently good, with limitless capabilities and having an openness to ideas, inspiration, even protection that perhaps the rest of us could learn from if we took notice. And that's what we hope to do on today's edition of Sentinel Watch, where we look at life through a spiritual lens. I'm David Brown. Our guest today has a deep love of children, their capabilities, and how we could learn a thing or two from them. Lyle Staley Stigler of Studio City, California, near Los Angeles, has spent much of her career in education, and as a student of Christian Science, she brings a unique perspective to this conversation. Lyle, great to have you on Sentinel Watch.
Oh, it's really great to be here, David. Thanks.
Tell me a little bit about how you got involved in education. Why were you so interested in the education of kids?
You know, I think I was always interested in education. I was one of those kids who grew up setting all of my stuffed animals up and giving them different names and places in my little classroom, in my room, and had my chalkboard, and I would get out and teach them. I started doing this probably when I was 4 or 5 years old, and that was one of my main games to play. And when I got to be college age, there was some feeling from one of my parents that maybe I should go into the law. And I remember considering that, but then when I prayed about it as a senior in college, it came very clearly to me that what I had always loved was education, and that really I needed to look into getting my credential and moving into that direction. And I'm so grateful I did. My career took many different turns through prayer and listening, but it always has had to do with learning and with children and how we can best instruct and teach in the classroom.
Well, you probably have a very different perspective than most when it comes to what kids are capable of, what young people are capable of, especially when it comes to learning. Tell us a little bit about the experiences that you've had in that regard.
I've had a lot of experiences just watching children. I've always been interested in them, in people in general, but particularly in little children. And it's interesting to me, David, that Jesus does talk about, you know, allow the little children to come to me. And he mm-hmm. specifies little, which I think is very interesting. I have had opportunities, yes, to study kids and to see how they come with everything that they are and that they need, because of course they are spiritual ideas of God. They're not little mortals. You know, in Christian Science, we learn that man is the image of an infinite divine parent, the offspring of a parent that is infinite divine love, is mind, which is another name for God, divine intelligence, and that is their source, and that is their heritage. So it's always interesting to view them that way, and everyone that way, as we take a look at them and teach them and work with them and play with them. And it's been fun for me, too, in the sense that some of this study has come full circle recently, because I have a whole passel of young grandchildren now, three of whom live locally. And I can give an example of things that I've been learning recently, for example, just from watching little children.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. One of my grandchildren at this point in time, this was several months ago, and she had just turned 2. And she really had it in her head. She'd gotten up from a nap, and she really had decided that she really wanted to go downstairs and get on this swing that had just been set up downstairs in the garage. And I'm there sitting on the couch and taking care of her little sister. And her mom is there, and this little one, this two-year-old, was quite stridently saying, I want to go do this. And her mother was saying, honey, I think what you need is to eat. I think you're hungry. You haven't eaten in a while, and I think you need food. And her mother very calmly went to the kitchen and started to cut up grapes and make little turkey rolls and put them on a plate and prepare this food, as this child is still saying that she wants to go downstairs, and her mother has already told her, that's not what we're going to do right now. That's not what you need. So she's there, and her mother brings the plate and puts it on the little table, and the two-year-old is sniffling and kind of walking around the table and kind of circling it a little bit, and then she calms down and she sits down and she eats up all the food on the plate. And then I quietly hear her say, thank you. And she no longer talked about what she wanted to do. And I thought that's so interesting to me, because I think little children, even if they push back or they think they get in their head some idea that they want to do, they have a sense that they are being cared for, that they can trust that the parent is going to know what they need in spite of what they think they want to do, and that they will respond to that and recognize that at some level. They don't think they're in charge. They may want to be in charge sometimes, but they don't really truly think that they have recourse that way. And it's interesting to think about that in terms of how some of the misconceptions maybe that we start to carry as grown-ups about childhood and adulthood and that relationship between parent and child into our relationship with God, which is not at all the same thing.
What do you mean by that? Say more.
Okay, well, I think for one thing, when we're little children, we do tend to, as I was just talking about with my granddaughter, deep down, we know she didn't have recourse. She couldn't like take the car keys or run down, open the gate and run down and swing on the swings or whatever. So we have this sense that someone else is in charge and that we can trust that. But I think the expectation as we get older is that we're supposed to become independent. We're supposed to leave the household and go off. And we use words like this, build our own lives. Create a career. We think that that's what is expected of us, and it is on a human level, to go off and kind of take what we've been given and go off and do something on our own.
Yeah, strike out on our own, right?
Yes, strike out on your own, and that's what's expected, right? Another misconception I think we start to carry is that we'll turn to our human parent if it's a good relationship, but really only in emergencies, okay? Another one might be that we think it's all down to us and that we have control over how things are going to go, for good or bad. So there's some of these misconceptions that I think we carry, I should say I've been carrying, that I think need to be seen and rooted out. And really, I've been looking a lot at how little children are and thinking about that and letting that give me inspiration, and then also looking to Christ Jesus, because he to me is the consummate example. And it's interesting because when you look at what Jesus did, the words, the works, what he said about God, what he said about his relationship with God, our relationship with God, Jesus never outgrew God's parenting. And he didn't think we were expected to. And it gave me even a different view on a parable of his that I have always loved, which is the parable of the prodigal son. I think when the younger son in the parable leaves and he goes off, I was more focused for some number of years on, oh man, he had his chance.
Right.
And he blew it.
Right.
He wasted his substance with riotous living. And I found I was missing the point, because I was so used to the idea that a child should take what was given him and go off and make his own life, that I kind of skirted over that part. And really, that was the central problem, was that he thought he could leave, or he thought he could be separated from his source. But God is our creator, our father. Infinite divine love is our divine parent, is our source, and we can't be cut off from that. We are one with Him because we are His beloved individual spiritual expression. And we're not expected to try to do that. We're not expected to leverage God and go off and do something else.
That's a really interesting perspective that you're talking about there. And I feel like I've been there. I had that same sort of sense about the parable of the prodigal son that you were describing. I sort of felt like, you know, okay, well, it's a failure to launch. And, you know, why is his dad carrying on so much after he had, you know, frittered away all that he had, you know? And it took me a while to come around to that sort of realization of what this story was really saying about our relationship to our Father. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean not a human father or mother, but to God. But as we talk about this, though, Lyle, practically speaking, what does that mean? What does it mean if we do recognize our kinship with God, if we can stretch the metaphor a little bit? What do we do with that?
God is everywhere. All the doing is God doing it. And man is the emanation and the spiritual expression of that. So it's not that we aren't going out and being, you know, expressing intelligence, expressing wisdom, expressing love and compassion, doing important work. But all of that is sourced in God. You know, Jesus talks about this, again, going back to what he said. He talked about, I and my Father are one, okay, which to me means that Jesus is claiming that his sole source is God, infinite divine love and mind. He's not taking what God gives him and going off to create a mission of healing and salvation all on his own, okay? Because he also says, I of mine own self can do nothing. And this is Jesus we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So I think it's that sense of, absolutely, we are the reflection of God. And honestly, a reflection can't choose not to be a reflection because it's not the source. So it's more leaning into and doubling down on recognizing and loving and trying to understand and be open to what our true source or true parent or true heritage is. And I've experienced a number of healings by kind of revisiting this in different ways. I had grown up in Christian Science Sunday School. Both my parents were students of Christian Science. So I grew up in a household where we were taught to really turn to God and to study the Bible, to study the Christian Science textbook. When we were not feeling well, our parents would come in and talk to us. And my dad was very Bible-centered and would bring in lots of quotes from the Bible and talk about Jesus's words and works. And my mother would do the same and then also kind of lean into some of the things that were written by the discoverer and founder of Christian Science in her textbook that really highlight how Jesus was demonstrating this oneness that man has with God and what God is, which is infinite good.
That textbook, of course, being Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, I mentioned a little earlier.
Yes, absolutely. And so I was reared in that kind of household. Mm-hmm. I continued to go to church and such, but I'd graduated from Sunday school. I was a young adult in my probably early to mid-20s. And was kind of getting on with what my adult kids referred to as adulting, which one of my kids once said, this adulting thing is really kind of hard. So I was in the midst of that, of kind of starting my career, trying to figure out different aspects of what it meant to now be in this new setting, what it meant to take responsibility for that. And I started to have problems breathing. And this went on for several months, and it was always uncomfortable and somewhat severe at times where I'd almost pass out because I couldn't get enough air. And I had called my Christian Science teacher because I had been through what's called primary class instruction, which is a two-week course on how to heal through Christian Science and heal as Jesus did or practiced trying to do that. So I called my teacher, who is a practitioner of Christian Science as well, obviously, and was working on it and praying about it and learning different things, but the problem was not yielding. And one day I was in a car. I was in the passenger seat because I wasn't driving at that point. I didn't know that it was safe. And I was looking out over this view because I was going up over the hills and I was looking down in the valley. And I thought, oh, Father, you know, I was talking to God. I don't understand. What is it that I'm missing here? Is there something that I need to understand about you that I'm just not getting? Mm-hmm. And David, it was like, it was so strong. This message from God felt so strong that it felt like a voice. It came to me almost as a voice in my thinking. And what it said from God was, I have named you, but I didn't name you Lyle Staley. I've given you a name. And I remember kind of taking a deep breath off. It was kind of, oh, that's right. God made me. And what this meant to me, by the way, is not that that God was trying to rename me humanly. It had to do to me with the whole picture, the whole narrative that had been forming around this person named Lyle Staley, who was born at a certain time and grew up and made some mistakes and did some things well and is now trying to be a responsible adult. That whole picture, that wasn't really the true picture. That was not what God was doing. That God knows me absolutely thoroughly as his divine spiritual child, and that he named me. He knows who I am. And that it's not this other limited picture of what Paul refers to in the Bible as the carnal mind. That whole picture was not the real picture. And it also felt a little bit like coming home. And what I mean is that part of me thought, oh, that's right. I'm a child of God. Oh, yeah. I remember trusting God completely and knowing that God's in charge. And the breathing eased a little at that point in time. And then over the next, I don't know, day to 2 days max, I was completely free.
And it really? Never... Completely healed of this?
Yes, completely healed of it, yeah.
And it's never come back or anything like that?
No, nope. And that's decades ago.
What happened there?
What happened, I think that it became so clear to me in that moment that God is my and everyone's source. God is our creator. God is our parent. God's doing all the doing. And it just became clear enough to me that I think what happened was I released a false sense of being separate from God or somehow trying to take responsibility for things in a different way. And really leaned into and understood and was willing to receive the idea again, as I had as a small child, that's the truth. That's what's really going on, is that God is infinite divine love, infinite divine spirit and intelligence, and God is right here all the time expressing himself as each of us spiritually and individually. And it's kind of a... one way I would put it, and it came to me some time ago when I was again trying to kind of wrest control and take over, was, you know what? It's not down to you. It's up to me. In other words, God is doing everything. It's not something that we're trying to make true. Mm-hmm. God is truth. So good is truth. Love is truth and is everywhere because it's spirit. So we're not trying to make truth true. We're not trying to earn the privilege of being children of God. We are relinquishing our opinions, or for me, it feels like I'm just letting go of some of the stuff that tries to get in the way and says that somehow that's not the case. But truth is true. You can't change it. God is doing what God is doing. I think it's just being receptive to that and yielding to that and enjoying it. It's such a joyous thing. So it kind of it was a little bit of a reset for me at that point in time. And it doesn't mean that I consistently knew all the time that God was in charge or that this is what it meant to be a child of God. But I think I was more alert to that possibility. Mm-hmm. And I later experienced another healing when my oldest was 4 years old and I was not feeling well, and I was home with him and his little sister, and I was on the couch just trying to pray and trying to get a grip because I had these two little kids and I was on my own with them. And my little son walked up and said, "You're okay, Mommy. You're the grown-up of God."
Oh, that's beautiful. And that's great.
Yeah. And I was, in that moment, healed, got up and was able to move on, because what I saw in that comment was the truth behind it, which was that to him, I appeared to be a grown-up, his mommy, with some responsibilities.
Right.
He could see, because he'd been going to Christian Science Sunday School and he'd been growing up reading the Bible and such, that he could see right through that to, oh yeah, you belong to God too.
Wow.
He takes care of you too. And it was such a powerful message in that moment that I thought, oh yeah, that's right. Again, I keep having to be reminded.
I think this is sort of what I meant when I said, you know, we can learn a thing or two from kids along the way if we're willing to listen to them more deeply sometimes. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And we can listen to the childlikeness that is in each of us. It's not that we're deprived of that. That's a gift from God. The Bible talks about God that works with you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. So there's that sense that it's not that we have to scramble. It's not. This is not something we need to earn. God's love for us is unconditional and complete and whole, because God is love. God isn't a human parent sitting someplace sending down love. God is love. And so that power and that love is right there with us all the time. I was thinking about that too in regard to parenting, but when a child comes into our experience, you'll hear young parents talk about this. Oh my gosh, I didn't understand how much my mom loves me, right? I saw this child. And it's interesting to me, David, that there's no point in time where we say, okay, here's this new baby. Yeah, he seems pretty nice. You know, the jury's out, though. We'll wait 15 years or so to see if he's worthy of unconditional love. We don't do that. It's automatic and complete. And so that is kind of a parallel to love's love for us, God's love for us. It's unfailing. And so we have that childlikeness. That's how God sees us. We just have, I think, sometimes we turn away from it, or we think that because of our human model of what it looks like to, quote unquote, grow up, we forget. But Jesus never forgot. And I think he saw everyone that way.
And how reassuring it is to know that, you know, that that's not just a one-time thing.
Right.
That you can always turn to God's love. And it's not just as if God is there in times of need. And in fact, it gets back to something else, doesn't it? About when we talk about our parents, we often think about that whole human process of birth and all that comes along with that. This is speaking to something about our very nature that causes us, and rightly so, causes us to question, what is that, as you were saying earlier, what is that story about me and what's all wrapped up in there? This is about a different kind of birthright, a spiritual birthright that we sometimes don't take a moment to stop and recognize what that even means. What does it mean to be spiritual, holy spiritual? What does that mean to you?
What does it mean to me? I think it has to do with a constant rejoicing and awareness of the fact that God is all. That divine love, infinite life is all. Because anything that makes us feel as though we're separated from that is the lie. Okay, that's the false narrative. The true story is the story that's really told in Genesis 1 of a spiritual creation. And one of the things that I think has been helpful to me lately in terms of thinking about God and our birthright, our relationship to him, is Mrs. Eddy talks about God and she says, he is divine principle love. the universal cause, the only creator. And there is no other self-existence. And I think that word self-existence is such an important one, because what that says is that nothing created God. God just is. And God is all. And we are created. We're not in charge. We're not a source. But we are created. And we are the emanation, the spiritual emanation of this infinite, divine, self-existent being. Mm. And that is what we, as we recognize and yield to that, and are willing to turn away from the false narrative. Oh, this is what I am. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to wrest control. I'm going to move forward. The more we turn away from that and lean into the fact that we are the beloved individual spiritual children of a self-existent divine being, love, principle. And God is in every detail. This is not a haphazard thing. You know, I'm learning to embrace that more and more, because you referred to, David, the idea that, you know, we don't just have to turn to God in emergencies. And that's exactly right. The tendency, I think, sometimes is to think, I've got this. You know, if things yeah. go, I've got right. a problem with mm-hmm. this, better turn to God, as though somehow right. he's something that we kind of pull off a shelf and use. But rather that God is doing all the doing. Everything is God in his expression. And that includes us. And what a wonderful heritage that is. Mm-hmm. And having more curiosity about that has been important to me. I noticed that, you know, 23andMe, and I have Aunt Susie's eyes, and all these different things that people talk right, about, right. because they're trying to understand their heritage. They're trying to understand where they come from. We have a glorious heritage.
I love how you're putting all of this. This has very real implications, too, for those of us who are parents. Quite often, I think about something that my dad told me once. I probably said something about this on a previous Sentinel Watch, but my dad, especially when I was an older teenager, he was worried about me quite a bit and where my life was going and what I was doing and all of this. And I would sometimes see him down in the office praying, you know, really hard. And he was struggling with something, which I would later come to realize he was struggling with a fear that he had for me. Hmm. And I later learned all the strands of this story from him once when both of us were a little older and we were talking quite candidly. And he said that he had a wonderful realization when he was thinking about, you know, what was the root of this fear that he had for me. And he said it came on him what his job was as a parent. And he said for a long time he had thought of himself as sort of being responsible for me and responsible for, you know, making sure that I knew, you know, what I needed to know to sort of make my way as a older teenager, a young adult, and that, you know, he had to kind of protect me from myself, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And something that he learned was quite beautiful. No. My father is not him. My father is God. And that he can claim that for me right now. And he began to see himself, his role as a parent, as less being about, you know, that fearful sense of responsibility, and turning that all over to God. And he realized that all along his role had been much more as a kind of shepherd. Mm-hmm. Watchful, but not fearful. Never fearful.
Yes.
You know? And it's wonderful to just surrender that sense of false responsibility. You have a kind of lightness, you know? And it really does turn up the spotlight on your inherent freedom too.
Yeah, and it goes across all generations. I think one of the things you were speaking to so well, David, is this idea that each of us is a child of God. And as I have thought about it before, and I'm sure other people have thought this too, looking at my children, for example, you know, they're not the grandchildren of God. They're the children of God.
Right.
And it goes the same for your parents too. So it kind of crosses any seeming generational line. Mm-hmm. Each one of us is a child of God and only answers to God. And our role as parents and educators, I often think of the word witness, that we're witnessing God's power in action and seeing how that unfolds as this individual expression of God that you're looking at, whether it's a child or somebody else. There was a healing that happened that had to do with that as well for me. My youngest child seemed to be very ill in the night, and I was quite concerned about that and turned to prayer immediately because it had always been effective, and was praying. And the thought that came to me that was so helpful in that moment was, well, before you ever had this child, you were praying for him, which is true because I had an experience when I was younger that led me to start to pray for those that would be my quote-unquote children, because I started to understand that since man is created spiritually and everyone is created by God, that they already existed and that I could know what was true about them now, even before meeting them, quote-unquote. So the idea that came behind this healing was, so when you were praying for this individual and knowing that everyone is a child of God and that that was what was really true, were you frightened for him at any time? And I thought, well, no. Oh, why not? Oh, because he's under your care. I knew that you were maintaining him and that he's your child and that he's your idea. And then the thought came, and what exactly has changed? And I thought, oh, actually, nothing has changed, because this, again, this whole narrative of somebody being born into matter and then needing something different, that being cut off from God in some way, that that's not a true narrative. And it doesn't mean that we don't care for our children and take care of them, because that's a reflection of divine love and meeting their needs. But it all comes from God, and they are safe in God. We all are, all the time. So witnessing that and being willing to yield to that can be a very powerful thing in my experience as a parent.
And isn't it beautiful when you see little kids have these wonderful healings? They don't question.
Oh, yeah. And he was healed, by the way, immediately.
yeah. I love it. We really could pick up more, I think, on that complete openness to truth that so many kids just seem to express constantly, you know, a complete abandon into the arms of God sometimes, you know, that you can see it when they're running around in the yard quite often. It's like, no, God's got this. God's got this.
Yeah, he does. I mean, I think we've experienced healings as small children where that was the case. You know, I can think of some for myself, and I know you can too, of just completely just accepting the fact that God is right here and that God is love and that God is our father and our mother, and trusting that completely.
Lyle Staley Stigler is from Studio City, California. Lyle, it's been such a joy to get to talk with you today on Sentinel Watch. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, David. I really appreciate the Sentinel Watches and all that I've learned from them, so thank you for that.
Oh, me too. I gotta tell you, I love talking to people like you on Sentinel Watch. Are you planning on attending the 2026 annual meeting of the Mother Church? It's Monday, June 8th in Boston and online. Hear reports from officers of the Mother Church and hear from the field, along with an exploration of this year's theme, Ye are the light of the world. Let your light so shine. Whether you're joining us in Boston or online, make sure to register at christianscience.com/annual meeting. We'll see you in June. Sentinel Watch is a production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm David Brown. Our podcast is produced by Carlos Machado, Sophie Ungerleiter, and our executive producer, Amy Richmond. Our production assistant is Natasha Telshow. Our editor is Lisa Rennie Seitzma. Our audio engineers are Tim Malone, Noah Flatt, Alyssa Britton, and Ian Case. Our theme music is by Jonah Bobo. We'll talk again soon.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.